You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 26th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night, kind of late, but I'm hanging in there, is my partner Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Late.
For me.
Okay. Yeah.
Past John, my bedtime.
John and I are like, we're like on different time zones.
Yeah, we're on different pillow zones.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we overlap about 4 hours a day, and this isn't normally one of those hours.
Unfortunately for me, but that's all right. I'm good. I got energy. I'm feeling good.
He's doing his gambare.
I'm a maniac.
Okay.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Tyler Austin of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. We're going to talk about Interleague and the Interleague champion Bay Stars. And how's that, Mr. West Bay? And we're going to talk about the All-Star Game voting and a lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, a week ago on Sunday, I went to Yokohama Stadium to see.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am sure.
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. I don't know where the windstorm in the interview came from, but it was windy. It was windy, but I didn't realize it would be so noisy on the recording. But I was very fortunate that I did not know the rules to talk to players at Yokohama Stadium, because if I had known the rules, we wouldn't have an interview. Because I was able, not knowing a lot of players, it's hard to shout down at the stands from them from, 20, 30 feet above the field level.
Where shout down from the stands. Yeah.
Yep. Shout down and catch players' attention, especially when there are fans in the stands, which there were. So being able to go, I was told I could go into the camera seats by the stadium staff. And so I was talking to a couple of players there. And as soon as I was talking to a couple of players there, the DeNA Bay Stars attentive PR people came and told me to get the heck out of the camera seats because it wasn't safe.
They're so concerned about your safety, Jim.
They are. Actually, what they said, I said, why? And they said, it's the rule. And I said, because it's the rule. And they said, yes, because the reason you can't be here is because of it's a rule. I've heard that a lot the last couple of weeks. Okay. So anyway, but because I could catch Tyler in the dugout, then I could shout down at him from the stands and say, we need to go down to the field seats about 30, 40 yards down the field where the only place reporters can get close enough to bump fists through a wire fence.
Oh, gosh. This is at Yokohama, right?
Yep, Yokohama.
I'm so glad I didn't drag myself all the way out there for a fence fist bump.
Yeah, well, it's something. So anyway, we did have a chat, and we got to catch up with Tyler Austin. And in the meantime, on the way out to the ballpark, I was reading his post in the Players Tribune.
Mm-hmm. Is it a recent post?
No, I think it was last year. And it's really good, so I encourage you to read it. Look up for Tyler Austin DeNA, and he talks about his travails during the pandemic. And we talk about some other things going on in the interview. So it was just a real pleasure, because he was this burning star when he showed up. No pun intended. He was a huge part of the Bay Stars offense, and then made it to the U.S. Olympic team. And so I wanted to hear about all that experience. And so, well, let's have a listen. Okay, well, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast,
for the first time and long overdue is Tyler Austin of the DNA BayStars. So thank you so much for taking time to join us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. I know you've got a tight schedule with your rehab and treatment and all that. Oh, so all how is everything going with that?
It's going. You know, it's a slow process, a lot slower than I think a lot of us have anticipated. But I think I'm turning the corner, so hopefully we can keep that progress going.
Okay, when you came to Japan, you know, you came with a bang and you followed Neftali Soto and, mm-hmm. and how helpful was that coming here where there's a guy who's, you know, hitting home runs like nuts and knew a little bit about the league?
Incredibly, you know, him and I are really close friends, so to have a guy like that that's in your corner, give you advice, and especially for a guy that's coming in not knowing what to expect. And I played against him a lot in the minor leagues actually. Okay. in the States, so we knew of each other before I got here, but to have a guy like him and you know, all his talent and ability and things like that to share advice, you know, it's crucial.
Okay, now I read your bit on the Players Tribune, very nice.
Thank you.
What, you know, you had a lot of lessons from a guy who's a fan, or not, I should say, familiar with our podcast, Alonzo Powell.
Yep.
And what did he did he tell you anything that seemed like maybe out of date, or was everything just like he said it?
He's outstanding, dude. I still talk to him pretty frequently now. You know, he's my hitting coach with the Giants. So mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about Japan while I was there, you know, and what to expect. But when I got here, he just so happened he ends up being the hitting coach with Chinichi. So.
Right.
Every single time we played them, you know, I would go to him for advice and things with my swing, and it seemed like he always had the answer, man, like, and always does, you know. So, you know, it was huge having him as a resource to talk to and to, you know, get advice from. And, you know, I still talk to him pretty frequently now. So hopefully he can come back over here, man. I think this league needs him.
I'm going to talk about another guy you knew, I think you played with in the Yankees organization, is Gosuke Kato.
Oh, yeah. We were never on the same team.
Okay.
But spring training, we were there together a lot, you know, and so happy for him, man. He's doing well so far over here, and hopefully he can continue that and, you know, finish up the season strong and stay here and play for however long he wants to.
Now, your trip to Japan, like I said, it started out, you know, you started out just ripping the heck out of the ball mostly, but it's been kind of a, I don't know what, running into walls is probably a good expression, because you've done that and as well as all the other ailments.
It's been unfortunate the last year and a half, man, like just dealing with these injuries. And
what kind
and
of injuries
things.
Have they been?
I'd prefer not to go into
okay.
detail about
okay,
that.
Fine.
I mean, obviously everybody knows I had the UCL surgery last
right.
year, and dealing with a few other things
okay.
along the way. And unfortunately, you know, that's just been the part of it the last year and a half. So hopefully I can keep going and, you know, get back out on the field and be able to play, because it's killing me not being out there and playing every day.
Right. So you were DH'ing in the Yale Park.
Yep.
So how'd that feel?
Awesome.
Getting multiple
awesome.
At-bats in a game.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible to get a chance to play and play the full game. It's something that I've been missing, you know, the better part of a year now. So to have those games and, you know, get my feet back wet and playing a full game was nice.
Okay, now I said I wanted to ask you about the Olympics. How
yep.
how was now you get to play the Olympics in your home park?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the crazy part, not having anybody in the stands. You know, you could hear everything and whatnot. But I think for the most part, we were all so focused on the job that it didn't matter if there was 35, 40,000 people here or zero. You know, we had a good mindset going into it, and you know, just came up a little bit short.
Yeah, I was really happy that you and Nick Martinez and Scott were representing
yep.
the USA. And how
great
was that?
Guys.
Because that was the first time. You know, I've been telling when. John, I was telling the guys who used to help select the team, like 16 years ago, these guys in Japan can play in the Olympics, and they're going like, oh no, but the MLB owners want the AAA guys to play.
Oh my God.
So finally, they got you guys who could play, and
yep.
how was that?
It was awesome, man. That getting those two guys are incredible. They've got great careers here in Japan, and they're back in the States now, so I couldn't be happier for them.
Now, that was, of course, what, as I said, I expected Scott and you both to be back in the States by now. So was there any interest?
We didn't dive too much into it, to be honest with you, my agent and I still had another year after the Olympics, and then the BayStars wanted to kind of extend me and, you know, kind of give me a little bit more security. So it was like, you know, do I take a chance and you know, play out the one more year that I had and then go back? Or, and luckily for me, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but I got hurt last year. So it'd been a pretty rough scenario had I not signed my little extension with the team to stay here. So, but we'll see once my deal's over here, and we'll see what happens. I love playing baseball here. I love playing baseball there, but we'll see how see what happens when we get there.
Let me ask a last thing, because I know you've got things to do.
Yep.
What things have you learned about playing baseball, maybe that you couldn't have learned in the States?
I don't know necessarily. I don't know if there's much that I've learned that like I couldn't have learned there. You know, I think just getting an appreciation for how hard these guys work here. You know, I think that's kind of one of the major takeaways that I'll take away from here is, like, these guys come in every day and you know, they work extremely hard and, you know, leave it you know, they don't leave any stone unturned when it comes to their preparation for the game. So I think that is one of the major things I'll take back with me.
Okay, I've heard that one before. Yeah. And some people who were like you were always on that edge of staying in Japan for security or, you know, going back if a good contract comes.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, man. I don't know how many more years I got left in me, to be honest with you, with all these injuries I've had. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we wish you the best and the best of health.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay, and hopefully we'll be having you on the podcast for a few more years.
Let's do it. Let's do it, man. All right.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Okay, Tyler, thank you so much again for your time. It was very gracious of you to go all the way down to the field seats when you were rushing, you know, to do your rehab. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, we really have to thank these players because they're really, at least with me as well, they've been really accommodating. It is not easy. Before, we used to just tap them on the shoulder as they're heading toward the dugout or racing off the field, and we could arrange a couple minutes to chat and find a place to do it. And now it's very restricted. So they have to make an effort as well. We have to make an effort, but they have to make it as well.
Yeah. So what stood out for you?
Well, you know, I did talk to Austin that day that I went and did the Neftali Soto interview. I talked to him at Tokyo Dome and said, hey, we've got a podcast. We've been itching to have you on, but it's, you know, you've been here during the COVID times. And so we haven't been able to pull you aside and do an interview. So this is great. I showed him the podcast and let him know that we wanted to do the interview. So I'm glad you were able to catch up with him and do it. And I think he probably knew, if he remembered, seeing you from the podcast picture. So, and he didn't want to discuss one of the injuries that he has collected along his time, or during his time here in Japan, but I have it on good authority that he had a concussion, and that was early on when he crashed into a wall at Yokohama, right. And that it just wasn't dealt with. And I don't know if he's still suffering effects. I've heard that you can suffer effects of a concussion over years.
Sure.
And you can have issues. And I don't know how much of a concern that is right now, but I do know that he was dealing with that before, although I don't think it was made public. So, so that's one of the things. And then I don't blame him for not wanting to talk about it, because you don't want other teams to know. You don't want teams to know about it. And you might catch a ball to the head. You know, you step into the batter's box. It's a possibility every time. And what that would do, what that would mean for his career and all those things. But that was, I guess, one of the things that stood out to me when he talked about the injuries and that he's not sure if how long he's going to continue. And a lot of times when you hear people say that word retire or bring up the notion of not continuing a career, because he wasn't specific about it. But anytime you hear that, you always think, oh, well, everyone says if you're thinking about it, you're halfway done. And I don't think that's the case in Tyler's situation. What I'm thinking is there's another wall. You always have the wall of, you have to be better than the opponents. And before that, you have to be better than the guys on your team so that you can get the opportunity to challenge your opponents. And before that, you have to be healthy enough to be able to challenge the guys on your team before you can challenge the opponents. I mean, it is a long path to finding some success. And I think that what we're hearing is before you can even get to this place in which he can challenge his teammates, that these injuries are putting up walls for him. And I think that's what we're hearing. And that's probably just more frustration than anything. I don't think he wants to retire at all. But because when I talked to him, he was so happy to talk to somebody else other than a teammate in English here in Japan. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of that. I don't know how much you've gotten from it from some of the players, but there's a lot of loneliness that has gone on during this coronavirus thing that people have been these players have been isolated. And a lot of times the only interactions they have are people with baseball backgrounds, and they only talk baseball. And that's one of the things I try to talk about the guys with is before we start taping, if we do have time, is, you know, how is it going in your life? How are you adjusting to life here in Japan? How are you dealing with the stress of everyday life, not just the stress of having to produce in a high pressure situation? So I think that when I talked to Tyler the first time, it was more of, yeah, it's nice to talk to somebody else outside of the team here. How about you? How long have you been in Japan? He's asking a few questions about me. And so we just had a brief conversation, but it was fun. The other thing I wanted to note was when I did chat with him, I don't remember his first name, but Mr. Ebihara, the announcer for the Giants, who's always on the Jitas channel, or he was telling me that Tyler was talking to, they have a mental coach. I don't know if that's the phrasing he used. And I'm not sure if what we would call is a sports psychologist or something similar to that, but they call it a mental coach. And the Bay Stars have a mental coach this year, and this coach speaks English, and I didn't get his name. And I'm looking through the pamphlet as the book now and trying to remember his name and look and see if I can see his face. And I don't really see him on here because most of the guys I do recognize as former players. But this Tyler was talking to this coach before, and Tyler did mention to me that day that, you know, getting back into the flow of playing baseball is still kind of, he has some apprehension because it's just, forgive the pun, but it's kind of foreign to him right now because he has been out so much. He gets back in, he ends up having something else happen and he's out. And even with you talking, you know, you're saying he's still not used to going out every day. And he's not getting an opportunity. I mean, you remember, I think it was with the DH and playing in interleague, it was different for him. It was better. It was good. But he still hasn't had time, hasn't had the opportunity to go out and play in the field every day. And so I think there's a lot going on. And I'm not sure how many teams right now have that sports psychologist kind of a guy on the staff. So I think it's kind of a progressive thing going on with the Bay Stars, and it's good. And I'm glad to hear about it, and especially having a guy who can speak English and deal with the foreign players as well. I think that's important. And that's something that's really, hopefully at the end of the season, we can say at least these guys are fine with their mental approach as they go in, and they don't look stressed out. Cause a lot of times you talk to some of these players, and we haven't done it in a while. At least I haven't done it in a while. You've been able to talk to some of the Japanese players, but they're just so caught up in everything and all the pressures that they're not loose in any, you know, they're not having fun at the end. After the All-Star game and everything kind of gets serious, the business end of the season starts, these guys get tight and wound up pretty good there. And it's hard to talk to them and get straight answers or anything, but, yeah, that was it for me. I mean, like I said, I don't think he's thinking about retirement. I just think the wall with the injury situation is getting, while he's not growing taller, the wall is getting higher and harder to climb. And you collect, as I said before, as we old guys, you don't get over injuries. You just collect them and learn how to manage them. as you go forward, and it gets harder and harder to manage the whole collection of injuries. So I think I understand what he's talking about. What about you? What's it up
for
you?
Well, I think the tone was really what caught me. I think not so different from you. It wasn't so much the story, because the story was he was really, well, I was so fascinated by the Olympic experience. And that was a big thing for me. But it was the tone of, one, gratitude for having this opportunity to be in Japan and to perform here, and a sense of uncertainty about where he is and where he's going. And of course, there was, he was very happy. I mean, and I hate to say this, you know, he was so happy to get into full games of the DH, because he was going up and striking out and wanted bad every game as a pinch hitter, essentially. But he had some hits as a DH, and so it looked like he was getting his timing down. And he said, yeah, it's coming back. It felt really, really, really good. And I was really happy to see that. And of course, what happened, but at the end of Interleague, probably about the time I talked with him, he was being treated for a shoulder sprain. And he was deactivated, I think, on Monday with a shoulder sprain. And it's like, man, it's the Rosanna Dana. If it isn't one thing, it's another. So I felt really bad about that to see it. But, you know, that is, again, as you said, it is part of the deal. You know, you have to, there aren't a lot of allowances. You know, there's not a big safety net, generally speaking. Although, as he said, he was fortunate to have one, because had he taken one of the offers that were available to him after the Olympics, he might be out of work right now.
Wow.
So wow. Because of the timing, his timing has been pretty terrible. But, you know, we wish, getting back close and getting within shouting distance of the field has allowed us to connect with these players we've never spoken to.
Yeah.
And you know, and I shouting always...
distance. Look, we can shout from the rafters and they can hear us, because there's usually at that time of the day, there are no fans in early on. So, yeah.
Right.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah. No. And when I, you know, and today's a good example, you know, what I say to all the players, you know, stay healthy. And when they hear that, they light up, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. That's number one, stay healthy. And I do recommend you again, go look for that Tyler Austin piece in the Players Tribune, because it does highlight really how hard the COVID was for an import player in Japan who was just starting. You know, he was just starting out when that happened. So, it was the second year he came in, I think 2019, and then it hit. So anyway, we wish you the best, Tyler. Hopefully come back strong in the second half and be healthy.
Yeah, and thanks so much. And I was jealous, because I wanted to do the interview, but anytime, we were talking about this, Jim and I, today, anytime you get a chance to get that interview, nail it down, especially with an interesting figure, just do it. You know, don't worry about who's doing it and when and the timing, just get it done. It's just like the philosophy should be, just when you're on vacation and you see something that you really like, I was told to, you know, if you really like it, get it, because you never know if you're going to be back at that place or you're going to see that item and if it's going to be the right size or the right price or whatever. So just get it. So treat interviews the same way. Just get them done and we'll sort it out later.
Well, you're all listening to two people who on their days off do pretty much what they do on their work days.
Don't give away company secrets.
I mean, that basically because now, as I said, close enough, you know, get within shouting distance, and some ballparks even spitting distance and fist bumping distance.
through a fence. This fence fist bumps. Yeah.
Yep. I still got, I got some wire marks from the fence in Yokohama. And I was going to shake hands. I had to put two fingers through like a baby handshake. Anyway, because of that, because we're that close, I feel like when there's an opportunity to get to the ballpark before my shift starts, I'm going. Of course, that was always the case, but it's the first time in 4 years where it's been an option, really. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's go and shift and talk about the Bay Stars. Thanks again to Tyler, and hope to see him soon. And let's talk about the Bay Stars winning Interleague for the first time. And the record's not impressive. Okay. So 11-7, and there were four teams, I believe, with 11-7 records, two Central League teams, two Pacific League teams, which makes sense because I think during the whole early on, I think the Pacific League had kind of an advantage head to head, but the Central League kind of took that over. And then at the end, the Pacific League made a push and finished with 54-52-2 record. So the head to head goes to the Pacific League, but the championship goes to the Bay Stars. Like I said, first time ever. And I learned a new, I don't know if it's a Japanese baseball term or not, but it was TBQ that I saw in Sports Hochi, and it said total baseball quality. And that was what they were calling the tiebreaker. And it just looked like run differential to me, but I think there was a whole formula and a whole set of circumstances for the breakdown in case the tiebreaker had to go beyond run differential, and it was a mess. Yeah,
it had arithmetic symbols in it. So John, you can still hear the whoosh when he ran away from it.
Don't be mean.
Why? It's what I do best.
I don't like the math and the algebra and geometry and what else? Trigonomics and statistics and all that stuff.
I forgot.
Just don't want to apply it to daily life.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the TBQ is that total. I think that comes from the World Baseball Softball Confederation. It's one of their tiebreakers. It's basically how many runs you score per nine innings, minus how many runs you allow per nine innings.
Sounds like run differential, but they add in the innings which you don't play.
Well, it's essentially based on how many innings you play. So
They factor in the one that you don't play. So if you win at home and you don't bat in the ninth, inning that you don't play. So they actually give you the nine innings. You get bonus points.
You get extra credit because you're not charged. You have a higher run per inning than if you were played a full nine inning game.
I understand. Okay, all right. So that was the deciding factor, basically the run differential. And it was funny because Michael Westbay, congratulations again, Mr. Westbay. Very good job by your cheering group and support group for the Bay Stars. You guys did a good job. The Eagles were the only other team apparently with those three standalone games that were played Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week. And they were the only team, the Eagles basically were the only team that had an opportunity to do anything about it on the field.
They needed two one-sided games.
Yeah, well, they had one. They just were on the opposite side.
And they were trying for two. It's like somebody gave them the wrong message. Two one-sided games were in. And then it's like halfway through the second, they went, hold on a second, we got this wrong.
Yeah, you got to win by 15 runs, not lose by 15 runs. Yeah, so they were the only team that had an opportunity to change their run differential, but they would have had to score 30 runs to overturn it, and they lost by, I think, wasn't it 13-0?
13-0 to the Swallows.
The Swallows on the first night, that basically sewed up the win for the Bay Stars. So the Eagles in fact, they didn't even get to 11-7. They were going to have to win their games to do it, so they didn't do that. So Now, what was the final count on run total head to head?
I don't know what the final count actually was. I don't recall it, but the Central League actually did lead in runs for the first, which I think it was only the second time that's ever happened.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I was thinking, you and I talked about it last week, and I said in three games or over three games on Saturday or Sunday, I can't remember which day it was, that the Pacific League had racked up a plus 16 or plus 20, think it was.
Well, the Rocktown Eagles.
But then the Eagles made up for that.
The Eagles gave the runs away. Yep.
And the Dragons even beat the Eagles on a day. So then they had a 5-0 lead, and they gave up a couple unearned runs. What are you guys doing? You're ruining the plus minus.
There was a couple of fun things. I mean, there was a lot of fun things. And I know, like, John, I just absolutely love Interleague. I would actually go back to the old three games at home, three games away.
36 baby.
Game.
Let's do it.
And, you know, this funny thing is the Central League hemmed and hawed and said, you know, we know, but the PL had been wanting Interleague for years, and the CL was saying, no one's gonna pay to watch the Kintetsu Buffaloes play the Yakult Swallows. And I'd say, you know, and of course now you'll say they're right because Kintetsu is out of business, but we know because we put them out of business.
And, well, the other story I always heard was that no other team in the Central League wants to lose the gate money earned from playing the Giants because they travel so well. But what they forgot or what they didn't realize was that Hanshi travels really well, and so does the Lotte Marines fan base. And I don't know if it's even traveling. I think they're already established nationwide, so they get a chance to see their team. They're going.
Yes, and the thing about interleague play, which is really interesting, is that the interleague attendance is so good now. And here's the thing: teams fans want to see their team play against teams they don't normally get to play.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, let's go, especially on the road. It's like we get to go to different parks. It's just amazing. The attendance has zoomed every single year. And I know, and you know, I talked about it a few times, but I know the first couple of years, the Chunichi Dragons avoided playing interleague games at Nagoya Dome. And I think they were doing it to lower their internet league attendance to make an argument about it.
Oh, gosh.
So they were playing in Toyohashi and Shizuoka, and they were playing in Nagaragawa in Gifu, and they were playing in Kanazawa. They were doing everything they could to keep the attendance down. But of course, what happens now is these teams, the Hawks, will come and, you know, bring in 15,000 Hawks fans to their games. And right. It's like, oh, you mean we can make money doing this? But
never occurred to them. Like,
it's like the it's like the Steve Martin line about going to heaven that you didn't believe in. This is in college. They told us this was all, you know, BS. and that's how the, you know, and whoops, there is heaven. And the Dragons are going, wait, people come to these games, you know, and teams are making money hand over fist through interleague. And the economy has changed too, because teams don't get the home TV money that they used to get. The TV money was the big thing for the Giants. That's so far down, but the TV money for the PL teams is way up. So it's not a bad deal anymore.
Yeah, it's making sense. So just to go through quickly, so the 11-7 teams were DeNA, SoftBank, Yomiuri, and Oryx. And of those teams, DeNA had the best total
SBQ
baseball quality.
TBQ. What,
TBQ, SBQ, something BQ, barbecue.
SOS.
Let's get some sauce for that.
Fair enough.
But now.
Stick a fork in it, it's done.
Yeah. What was the other thing? I think the thing we did see was some movement in the standings on either side of the of the leagues. And I think Hanshin had a 6-game lead over DeNA before interleague started, and that dropped down to 2.5 coming out of it. And then they played, they have played so far 2 games in this 3-game weekend series to get back in the league play, and have dropped them both. So now the Bay Stars are on the verge of, if they can pull off a sweep on Sunday, taking over first place here at the end of June. And that's nice. That says something for them. So and that's interesting. And then Lotte, they went from first place to third place and coming out of Interleague. And, I thought, again, Glenn teases me for not wanting to look at the standings, but the standings lie sometimes. Just because you're in first place, because a lot of times when they were playing the first thing that they said when they went down to play Hanshin was, this is, these are the two league leaders playing. And I'm like, yeah, but, Lotte is just kind of happens to be up there right now. This is going to fluctuate. We're going to see change. This is not like we're taking on the first place team and the first place team. This is a possible, quote unquote, Japan series preview kind of a series. I'm not looking at it that way, because I don't really know who's coming out of the Pacific League. Hanshin might very well come out of the Central League, but the standings lie. It's June. Liars.
But the June standings aren't the final standings. I think that says it enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So the MVP of Interleague was Kazuma Okamoto of the Giants. And gosh, he had a great interleague session. I saw the numbers. I think it was 383, 8 homers, 19 RBIs. Shu Omaki was of the DeNA Bay Stars. He was an outstanding performer.
He was of the Central League's valuable player. Like,
not most valuable.
Sorry, the rest of you guys go hang. I'm valuable. And yeah. I'm sure he did a little dance part, because that's his thing now.
Yeah, he did really well. And I saw somebody on Twitter, they were angry, and they tweeted out the fact that Kensuke Kondo of SoftBank had some really strong numbers as well.
He did? He was the Pacific League's valuable player.
Right. But he had really much better numbers.
They changed it a few years back that they picked one player from the winning team. It was written down in the rules. And now it's the player who does the most.
So anyway, it was fun stuff there with the batters. But I wanted to point out, even though Chunichi was terrible again, and they weren't awful, because they were just weird, because they played SoftBank really well, and they played Oryx really well, and they played Lotte, I think it was 1-1-1 in that series. So they had one of each of the three, but then they couldn't beat the teams that are in the lower half of the Pacific League in the second half of this interleague session. But Hiroto Takahashi, their budding ace, had a 0 ERA in his 3 starts. And he faced SoftBank and then Lotte and then Rakuten, and he had a shutout of Lotte for his win. So amazing that he came out of that with a 0 ERA. I think he had 23.2 innings pitched.
Yeah, I think he had two unearned runs. And he caused one of them.
Yeah, he was not helping his own cause. So kudos to him going through. Yeah, of course, if he played with a better team, he would have been 3-0. I think he ended up 1-0. So good for him. Any other observations from Interleague for you?
Yeah. The Yakult Swallows, their offense, which has been, somebody talked about how bad their pitching have been, and their starting pitching have been bad this year. But really, their pitching in Interleague, their offense, until Interleague, the offense was really the biggest problem. It just wasn't firing at all. And in Interleague, their offense was actually not bad. And it was the pitchers who, I think, were giving away runs. They were selling runs on the black market, making extra cash, meeting the guys on the other team before the game or something, because they were finding ways to give it up. And it was like they couldn't strike anybody out in Interleague. I mean, when the ball was put in play, it was pretty good. You know, they were good, but the problem was they couldn't strike anybody out, so they gave up so many hits. If they had struck out a fair number, it would have been really good.
Right.
But they were throwing strikes, but not striking anybody out. So that was the thing that interested me. The NA Bay Stars, also their pitching was not all that good in interleague, which was kind of interesting, especially when they came out of interleague with two. I want to touch on the Tigers DNA series here, just since you already referenced it. I think the Tigers went into that series planning to get into the DNA bullpen, and we'll see how that works on Sunday. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Although these games have been so close and low scoring, really high quality games, but yeah, they got Azumud today.
Yeah. They almost got shut out twice if it weren't for a leadoff home run by Yusuke Oyama in the ninth inning on Friday night. So that's their run in two games.
Yep. Yep. All right, so let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the All-Star Game voting. So the All-Star Games are coming up in Nagoya on July 19th and in Hiroshima the next day on the 20th. And I just looked at the voting that was released recently. And I have to say, good job, Hanshin fans. Clap, clap, clap. You guys have done an outstanding job of getting your players in. Did you see how the voting had turned out for the position players and the pitchers? There's a Hanshin Tiger at the top of every position.
Oh, well done.
That's super awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it is, the All-Star Game is what it is. And I, you know, it's not meant to be, it's meant to be fun. I mean, I suppose it's meant to be some kind of honor.
Some kind of honor.
Yeah.
You're still searching for the honor.
Yes. It is. But on the other hand, the voting is so stupid. The way of the voting is so, the only thing I like about Japan's voting is that the players get to vote in any, the players vote on the one pitcher. They don't get to vote for middle relievers or closers, but they get to vote on one pitcher and eight or nine position players, depending on which league it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if the players vote in somebody who wasn't voted by the fans, that player gets onto the team. So if you had like two completely sets of, you know, if the player, the fans vote is so off base that it's weird, then all those guys, the players will get to put everybody in.
Right.
And then the manager and the coaches pick whatever's left, which is only a handful now, because once they get the starting pitcher, you know, they'll pick three or four pitchers and that's about it, because there really isn't any room left.
Right. Well, speaking of not having any room left, you look at the I expected Noki Sasaki to get just about every vote and lead the way. And he only has about half as many votes as the leading vote getter, as far as I could see. Now, you're better at these things than I am, because you've been looking at them for a longer time. But I believe Koji Chikamoto of the Tigers is the leading vote getter in the All-Star voting among fans at 685,000 votes.
Well, typically the Central League is going to get a few more votes, just the way it is.
Just the way it is. I know that song.
That's right. Bruce Hornsby, I think.
That's right. Look at you. Almost knowing a mainstream song from the 80s.
Okay. I'm a deadhead, and Bruce Hornsby played a lot with the Grateful Dead. So.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah, 685,556 votes, which is, Roki. Well, the thing with the pitchers is there's so much competition.
I don't care. And the reason I'm pointing out the fact that I don't think it matters in this case is because Chikamoto is not a household name.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a Tiger. It doesn't matter if he's a household name.
But I mean, you know, Sasaki is. So if there's more competition among pitchers, whatever, he has more than twice the number of votes. That's saying a lot for the Hanshi Tigers fan base. I'm not saying it's saying it that much for the entire fan base of Japan.
Hey, Sheldon Noisy, go for it.
It's a good job, Hanshin Tigers fans.
How many at-bats does Shota Morishita have? The Tigers rookie. I got to look here.
Not that many. Not enough to be on the All-Star voting.
Well, he's fourth. He's just barely, you know, he could be the, he'll have to surpass the All-Star. You know, he'll have to build up a resume to surpass the all-star resume of Sheldon Noisy.
Surely you jest.
Go for it. I basically have, you know, if they wanted to make a really good all-star voting system, they could,
mm-hmm.
but they don't.
Yeah.
They, well, you know, it's broken, but it does, you know, it's broken in our eyes because it's not a good system, but it does what it's supposed to do. Except, you know, when they tried to copy MLB and have the one more player.
The plus one.
The plus one, right. They had this, you know, they started doing it in Japan. And that's a great, I love it in America. It really works. You know, they get.
Because there's one game in America. Yeah, in Japan. Yeah.
But they'll get 20, 30, 40,000 votes. Sometimes the plus one in Japan is like gets the winning player gets like 500 votes. And it's like
Mr. Irrelevant.
No, it's like, Mom, get your friends to call. You know, get your friends to write in. I want to go to the All-Star game.
And okay. She does.
Oh, and she does, right. That's the thing.
And girlfriend too. But I don't know. The game is not, it is for the fans. So I would just hope that it doesn't seem to play out the way it's playing out now, which is the biggest voting fan base votes in all its players. And that's
well,
the
it's
end.
Pretty typical. If the Tigers are in first place during the All-Star voting, they typically fill up the team with Tigers. I remember it was the same. It was the same way in 2003 and 2005.
Well, that's 20 years ago. Yeah.
Well, they're the Tigers, you know.
Well, okay. All right. Well, so the other voter, the other vote getter I see right behind Chikamoto, or the second behind Chikamoto, is Tomoya Mori of Oryx. He has 600,000 plus. And then Yuki, I'm sorry. Yeah, he's third. And then Yuki Yanagita has 600,000, 16 plus. Lots of votes for these guys, fewer for Roki Sasaki and the Yoshinobu Yamamotos of the world. But I think, like you said, the coaches and players and everybody else will get those guys on the team, and it'll be the way it should be when we see them
like
on the field.
Yeah, I like that the players get a say because
I do too
about the team. That's the one thing they do well.
Because I a lot of times. I hear it in basketball all the time that this guy doesn't deserve to be an all-star because his team is not doing well. And I'm like, what on earth does a team record have to do with the guy being all-star worthy or not? Either he's an all-star or he's not. It doesn't matter if his team is in whatever place it is or the record's not that good. The guy's out there performing and doing really well. So give me a break with this stuff.
Yeah, I don't enjoy the All-Star games like I used to before Interleague. That was the sort of the downside to Interleague is it used to be three times preseason All-Star game and Japan series when you got to see these guys play against each other. Although that's also an exaggeration because they used to have dozens of postseason exhibition games. East versus West, you name it. Well, those don't exist anymore. So
yeah, interesting. All right. So making a two-seam transition. Now you wrote a blog post the other day. You got to talk to Tomohito Ito, who is the is the or is one of the pitching coaches?
Well, one of, you know, because no team has just one. You can't only have just one.
Yeah, well, I was looking through my roster book, and you got a gang of pitching coaches: the head pitching coach, the assistant pitching coach, the, you know, arm care pitching coach. I mean, they're just breaking it down here, but there is definitely a travel ball kind of thing.
Yeah, Hirotoshi Ishii is, I think, the other Swallows pitching coach, and he preceded Ito. Ito was a pitching coach before he went to the Rock 10 Eagles. He pitched for the Swallows, but we've talked a few times, and I basically wrote up it wasn't really an interview, but we chatted about 15 minutes at Cebu Dome a couple of weeks ago, which was really fascinating because, one, he's really frank. You know, I said, how do you like being a coach? He says, you know, I never thought I would be a coach because coaches were all, you know, these basically hard asses and, you know, guys who were supposed to shout at you and tell you what to do that didn't always make sense. And he says, and I could never get into that. So he talks about that, and we talk about how he sort of changed the Swallows from a central league kind of, let's see if the guy will chase a pitch 2 inches out of the zone on ball, the first pitch, to a first strike throwing kind of team.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives his, I thought that was the best answer, which was, I'll let you read the blog post, and it's called Catching Up with Coach Ito, jballallen.com.
Yeah. You know, and I got to read, I didn't get through all of it, being honest here, but just because I was busy, and Jim gave me the assignment, I think it was Thursday, and Friday and Saturday, just
it's not an assignment. There's no homework required. No written essay.
No homework required. He just sent me a link, and sending someone a link means read this. In my world.
Oh, okay.
So in
my world, it means try not to forget this.
Make sure you read,
because people know me, and they know chances are you send me something.
I know people. Now you're threatening me. Okay, don't make an offer. I won't refuse. You don't even have to make an offer. But I you know, I just like hearing about these pitching philosophies, because again, the story I always tell on the pod that I've been saying for more than a decade now is that we always know the outcome. We know the result of any given instance on a particular pitch or play or whatever happens, but we don't always know the entire plan. And so what looks like a bad plan might have been a mistake in execution. What looks like a bad pitch in execution could be the opposite, or it could be both. It was a bad plan, and it was bad execution of a bad plan.
Sure.
We just don't know unless you ask. And when guys talk about, when batters are specifically talking about, well, I want to see how they're pitching me and what they're doing. And it's these little details, the finer points of assuming pitchers can hit their targets, you know, let's say 90% of the time, and get that ball a couple inches where they're trying to get it off the barrel of the bat, or down in the dirt, or on a corner in the zone as opposed to outside the zone. Assuming they're hitting those targets, then yeah, we can have this discussion, but it's not, that's the difference between some of these really good pitchers and some of the elite pitchers, is that these elite pitchers can keep the ball, I like to say, keep the ball out of peril. And that's not always not throwing the ball right down the middle. It's sticking to the plan so that the batter is off enough so that he doesn't get good contact or doesn't get contact at all.
That's what he talks about, his approaches and his theories and so on, but particularly a really important approach to Japanese baseball. And I think a lot of people, and people know that I do a lot of the culture stuff. In fact, I probably wouldn't even write about baseball if it didn't give me an excuse to write about Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
And his approach is really, what's the word I'm looking for? I found it a little inspirational. So I enjoyed that, and I hope you do too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like those things too. That's interesting. I was talking to my wife, and I hate to get off of the baseball topic, but I think it's important, especially for those people who have been living in Japan. And I was talking to her the other day, and I said, look, as soon as I started studying Japanese, I realized I wasn't just studying language, that I was studying the culture. That, you know, when Americans look at something, we immediately count. How many of them are there? Do we need an S or not? When Japanese people look at something, they look at it and say, well, what shape is it? Because when you count it, you count by shape. And there are different ways to count by shape. And she had never thought about that. And I said, well, Japanese.
I'd actually never thought. I mean, obviously, I knew the bit about number, because Japan is mute on the subject of not entirely mute on the subject of number, but often mute on the subject of how many things are involved.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're right on about shape and attributes.
Sure. And so that when we look at things, we have a completely different perspective on how to approach looking at it. Mm. You know, we're looking at numbers, they're looking at shapes.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And I was talking today to Hirokazu Sawamura of the Lotte Marines. And
now of the former Giants, former Boston Red Sox pitcher.
I'm gonna write about him, because he talked about things that Ito said, and which a lot of the people, you know, Japanese baseball is changing, and I know Bob Whiting is, and he knows it's changing too, but you know, we like these broad themes that don't change.
Mm-hmm.
And the themes, the currents within those broad themes that are constantly changing. And it is changing to a player first kind of dynamic. If you can shield your eyes and keep it away from, you know, the Chunichi Dragons and Yomiuri Giants, you can see it's moving towards a more player first philosophy with the majority of coaches and managers. And you know, he talks about that. That was something that really struck Sawamura in the States, was that it is very, and well, got him when he arrived at Lotte, and Masato Yoshi was the pitching coordinator or the pitching coach then. I don't remember which, but
part of the pitching coach gang.
Yes, he was in the pitching setup there. And he said that he's all about, you know, what can I do to help you? What can I do to make what you want to do work? And Ito doesn't talk about that, but that's the thing, is the old plan in Japan was which hole does your peg fit in, and how do we hammer off the parts that don't work? You know?
Yeah, right.
Here's a chisel. You know, you don't Yikes. Need this. You don't need that.
I'm not chiseling my peg.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, nobody really wants to expand on that. But, you know, the square peg and the round hole kind of thing, we're going to, you know, this is how, you know, Japanese baseball used to be kind of like no square pegs allowed. And you got to submit to, you got to conform, and very little by little, that's actually the funny thing about Japan. And I'll nod to Bob Whiting, something he said astutely the other day when we were talking, is what hasn't changed is that the dynamic between individuals and groups is still there. You know, that individuals will always tell you how unique and different they are, until they get into, they're bound by the group dynamic in public.
Mm.
And then they'll tell you how they're exactly, they toe the line like everybody, and it's your job to do the same. and then you're in, it says, yeah, but, you know, that's all nonsense. You do what you want, because nobody cares. And then as soon as you get into the group, it's like everybody cares. So there's this double two-sided, everything's got two sides to it, but it is changing within that respect. It is changing, and the overall group trend is changing more towards a player-oriented philosophy, a player-first philosophy, which is absolutely fascinating for me.
Yeah, so to tie this up with a neat bow, I really enjoyed reading about how Ito is doing that for players and thinking about their needs and thinking about how he can be different from the coaches he experienced.
Yeah.
Because he starts out by saying, I didn't think I'd be a coach, but because he's thinking of the image of the coaches he had in the past, but he's not that. So he's not that kind of coach.
I don't know if I left it in the part where he said, you know, being this kind of coach can get me fired, but I can't.
Yes, he did. You did leave that in. Yeah.
Someday somebody could fire me because I'm not the guy. I'm not the guy who's going to go out there and shout at somebody for doing what the old school says I should shout at them for.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So we don't have any high heat this week, so we need some for next week.
Of course,
we're going to be packed next week with power tracks, but we'll make time.
Yeah, we want to hear from you.
We definitely do, and it'd be nice to get an MP3 as well. Anyone who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heats, and questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page, leave us a comment, criticism, suggestions, all those things there if you like. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark. I'll probably be in the stands.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBall Allen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.